All right, so tonight I'd like to talk about what's called the five hindrances. So we'll get into what those are and how to work with them in a moment. But just to step back, kind of the reasoning behind the class is to first learn to connect with our body sensations, to learn to rest our attention on our breath, on our direct experience. And learn to direct, to connect with our direct experience as opposed to our thinking. Our ideas around that experience. It's not about being anti-thought, but learning how to have this other relationship to our body and what it has to teach us. So this steady attention, this non-resistance, non-reactive attention, and then combining with releasing thought starts to teach us this template of how to work with all experience, like emotions as we explore tonight in the meditation, how to work with pleasure, with pain, and all the life events, the life circumstances that so often we struggle with, we are have difficulty with, you know, the world's battling with COVID and all the things that come up around that, you know, the various losses that we endure as human beings, all the difficulties we are have arise are all things we can learn to work with meditatively. Because we can really reframe the practice as learning to be fully present and to fully listen, to truly listen, to really sense what is present, to set aside our ideas and opinions and to touch what is actually here as opposed to our mind's projection. And as we do that, you may have noticed that there sometimes is a growing sense of calm, a growing sense of settledness. And this often arises, and overall, it should start to rise more and more. But it's not always the case. Sometimes we find ourselves really lost and pulled into a fantasy, really liking a thought or an idea, or maybe caught in a worry and anxiety, really caught in our reactivity to some aspect of a sound or an experience, feeling a sense of agitation, of restlessness. Or sometimes our energy just isn't there, or we find ourselves falling asleep, you know, that drifting mind or that all right conking out while you're sitting. Or sometimes we just get confused. We get disoriented about what we're supposed to be doing in this moment. You know, what's really, should I be meditating on this or that? Do these sound familiar to you? You know, that those mind states of confusion, the mind states of sleepiness. The sense of wanting and not wanting, state of confusion. So these states, if they're common to you, if they're, you know, often in a live class, I ask people to raise their hands to see how many have experienced those in this last sit or in on their practice. And it's almost universal that we've experienced those. It's actually really, I think, encouraging in some way and discouraging at the same point to realize that the Buddha 2600 years ago was also teaching people how to work with these hindrances. So part of it is just how our minds are formed, how are conditioned. These is a very common, predictable things that will happen. To use the classical phrasing of these five hindrances is the craving, aversion, restlessness and worry, sloth and torpor, and doubt. And we'll explore each of these a little bit more tonight. And when these arise in our practice, especially when we're trying to meditate, when we're trying to be present, it can be discouraging. And it's easy to take it personally, that there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me as a meditator. I'm not doing it right. And part of the reason to talk about these so directly is to try to depersonalize that, to realize that the people sitting with us in this virtual meditation hall are also experiencing that, those same hindrances. And in fact, when they arise, we often think the meditation isn't working. And in fact, often what's happening is the meditation is working very well. And let me unpack that a little bit. Because a hindrance arising can often mean a sign that the meditation's deepening, partly just because we're able to observe more clearly what's here. What's here throughout our days and not just be lost in it. So there's observation There's also a sense that we're starting to unwind and unpack this accumulation of stress and of worry in our lives. So the hindrances arise. One reason is that we're often under a state of tension most of the time. You know, we're constantly struggling with our work, with our jobs, with our families, with our health, with the, you know, whatever the politics may be that we're struggling with. All these things we're constantly fighting with. We're also personally constantly struggling to be somebody, to be someone who has a certain role, a certain identity, to be successful, to be happy. We're trying to create this successful, happy sense of who I am. And this tension has a physical, mental, emotional, and energetic components. Again, that's why you, if you listen carefully, a lot of times the instructions when I give them is learning how to just meet the moment just how it is, without an agenda, without trying to change it, but simply observe it just how it is. This is going exactly counter to what causes this pattern of stress, of disease in our systems. So when we meditate, we sit, we come in with that tension. You know, that physical tension, mental, emotional. And we just start to learn to sit quietly, to simply be present, to see what's here, to start to soften our resistance to this moment, to soften our opinions about the moment, about ourselves, about others. And in this way, we're starting to learn to truly listen, to deeply listen. And this listening itself, it's like it starts to unwind this tension pattern. And shows up in many different ways in our practice as it unwinds. You know, some of us may remember those old telephone lines, you know, that you'd have the receiver with a curly line that goes back to the body of the receiver. And sometimes that would, of course, get very tangled up. And one way to untangle it would just to hold it upside down and let it untangle itself. We're kind of holding ourselves upside down and letting that untangling happen. And it's often, if you ever had that experience of doing that, it's not often a graceful process. It's kind of jerky. It's going all over different directions. It spins, it twists, it jerks. And it's often the same way that happens with our practice, that we kind of take the tension off by just simply sitting quietly, stopping the normal activities of trying to fix, overcome, to change. And instead, we kind of take a respite from all that. And I just listen. I just sense. I just open to what's here. Okay, so that provides this unwinding of our attention. An example of this from my own relationship with my wife is that when we've been married almost 20 years now, but we're starting to do, before we got married, we did a little bit of this exercise of listening to each other. That we would sit down and one person would just go first and just speak what was going on in their mind, talking about, you know, the relationship difficulties or, you know, their hurts and slights. Another person's job was just to listen and to paraphrase, not to argue, not to confront, not to defend, but simply listen and to really paraphrase in a way that the other person felt heard. And then we would switch, you know, after a period of time. And when we first started doing this, you know, it would take a long time because we had a lot of stuff to unpack, to talk about. But it brought us so much closer because we really listened deeply to ourselves. We listened to the other person and we heard them not through our defensiveness, but who this experience of this other person. And so meditation is learning to listen very deeply to our own selves, our own experience. And the body sensations, as we were focusing so much on initially in the class, is a wonderful way of listening deeply and grounding ourselves in what's here. The thoughts and ideas and beliefs, we're eventually open to those also. And the practice naturally translates into those we interact with, loved ones, to strangers, to listen more deeply, to actually listen through our ideas, our prejudices, our biases, to actually hear that person and how they actually are. And by if you start to learn this, it's I think it's one of the most profound gifts you can give yourself or anyone else. It's simply the ability to listen deeply. And in that listening, we learn. We learn how life actually is. So this listening, as we do that, it's often not a linear process. That's why the hindrances come up. They start to, that tension of releasing starts to arise. And the hindrances, we can really work with them in three main ways. The first is to recognize that they're present, to actually name, okay, this is the hindrance that's here. My mind's caught in craving. My mind's caught in aversion or sleepiness. And just that simple naming, we've already stepped back to observe. We're starting to become more objective. We have a more of a spaciousness. In other words, we're not so caught in that state. We're not so lost and struggled in it. And then once we've named it, we start to meet it with some what's called skillful means. So these are some strategies or some ways of working with it to help us navigate it as they're passing through us. And then finally, to meet that without resistance. As we look back to last week's topic, that non-resistance to this moment's experience, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, hindrance or non-hindrance, that is the essential way of really meeting all these hindrances in any aspect of experience. And that non-resistance is something that evolves and deepens over time. And it's been a theme in my own practice for, 25 years or so. And I'm still learning more about resistance and non-resistance. So now let's look a little bit more at these hindrances and how we can work with them. So the first one is craving or desire. So this is simply the wanting of something that's pleasant. And as one person talked about, there's a wanting, when we're lost in thought, there's a way we want to be with it. We want to stay engaged with that. So it has this movement toward. So that could be a physical movement toward. I mean, sometimes you can just find yourself reaching for that extra cookie without even realizing that you're reaching. It's this unconscious seeking out of what's pleasurable. It can have a mental quality or emotional quality. And then there's that sense of, if I just get that, then I'll finally be happy. Or at least I'll be happy for the moment. And it has this strong pull toward movement. Now it can play out in a more subtle way as we're meditating through our relationship to thought. Kind of that mental fantasy, the memory, the future tripping, the reminiscing of things which are pleasant. And so many times I've come out of being lost in thought to come back to the body and find the body is uncomfortable, or there's maybe some discomfort or pain, and how I've realized I moved away from the pain towards something pleasurable, and my mind just conjured up something. So realizing, movement toward, feeling that movement toward, and releasing the object of what we're moving toward, and simply being present with actual wanting itself, is one of the fundamental ways to work with that. And that's something I recommend, playing with, is noticing how the mind and body want to move towards something pleasant. It doesn't mean we may not move toward it eventually, but pause for a few moments and notice, what does it feel like to want? What does it actually feel like to want something pleasurable? One of the more traditional ways of working with this hindrance is to notice what your mind's desiring and start to actually notice what's not pleasant about that. Because we kind of get these blinders on. We just see what's pleasant in our object of desire, to kind of sober us up a little bit. And finally, I just want to use this analogy for all these hindrances around how it affects how we actually observe, how I actually see life's experience, how it filters our way of seeing. And if you imagine that you are a camera crew and your job was to go out and document a foreign culture, a foreign, people, maybe even in a different planet. And your job was just to observe without altering, without changing, just to see as clearly as you can without any bias. Now, if that camera crew is not paying attention and they have this craving tendency, they're going to just focus on what they find pleasant. It's not going to be a complete view of that whole culture, that whole society. They'll just be focusing on what they find pleasant. And that distorts how we see life. So this is the first hindrance of craving. Now the next one is that of aversion. In some ways, it's the opposite of the same coin, but the opposite side of it. So if craving is moving toward, aversion is moving away. And we may find that, you know, you have a natural personality that tends to be moving toward things or tends to orient toward moving away from things. Nothing, there's no need to judge that or evaluate it, but just to notice that tendency. That I tend to walk into a room and notice everything I like about it, or I notice all the stuff that I don't like about it. And sometimes it's fun to kind of play with the opposite of your mind. Like, oh, that's kind of dusty there, or that's really beautiful there. It starts to balance our attention. So aversion is this movement away from something that's perceived as unpleasant, that we don't want. Okay, so you may ask, well, why not just move away? You know, with like sitting practice, this is a really, it's kind of a challenging thing to practice with, but it's also very helpful. Let's say I have an itch and I'm sitting still and the itch comes up and it's unpleasant. All I have to do is scratch it and the itch goes away. Why not just scratch it? Right? So, you know, on one hand, yeah, it doesn't really matter. But on the other hand, if I pause right there and notice, step back a moment and say, okay, what's really happening in this whole mind body? There's this itch and there's this impulse to try to fix that itch. Okay, there's something that's unpleasant and there's an aversion to it. I'm adverse to that unpleasantness and I want to act on it. I want to get rid of that. And practicing just pausing with that and feeling the intensity of the itch and the urge to move, this sometimes really amplifies it for a while. But it also teaches you how to work with the unpleasant, which you can't just scratch, that you can't just get away from. Because as we all know, that life gives us those physically, emotionally, mentally, pain we can't just alleviate with a simple scratch. And learning to practice with it in these small ways starts to build a capacity to meet it in the big ways in our life. So it's learning to work with those impulses, to play with it. You know, again, not to punish yourselves, not to be stoic, but just to be curious. What does it feel like to want to move away from or to move toward? And we start to develop this confidence to meet life in all its forms, all its experiences. So the camera crew in this case, the way it distorts the way we see, is now it's focusing on everything that it finds unpleasant. Like when it sees something that's ugly or that's distasteful, that's what they focus on. And so the documentary, the filming is really distorted. It's really biased toward what's negative, what's not pleasant. So working with aversion, again, we've talked about already, feeling it as a raw experience, a direct experience. What does it actually feel like to not want? To not like? What does it feel like to want to move away from? So a big trick in this is to, I like to say, suspend the object that we're focusing on. So let's say this striker I use for my bell, it represents something I'm really adverse to. Usually I just say, well, this throw it away, get rid of it. But instead say, okay, there's the object. I'm going to just let it be here and notice the movement away. Notice the resistance toward. Okay, so let the object kind of be itself for a little while and feel the movement away. If you take this on as an experiment, I think you'll find something very interesting about yourself. And you start to develop that, oh, I have this choice. And even things that I used to always move away from, that perhaps I don't have to move away from so much anymore. Turning toward it with curiosity, with interest. What does it really feel like to not want? And as I talked about with one question, you can also balance something that's painful and charged. Balance your attention with that and something that's pleasant. And going back and forth starts to balance your mindfulness. going into a room, noticing your tendency to notice what's pleasant or unpleasant about the room, and intentionally notice the opposite of that. It starts to make your mind more pliable. It starts to give you more freedom. You become less driven by your habit of mind. So restlessness, so craving and aversion, and now restlessness and worry. So restlessness and worry. So this is an excess of energy. Like the system just has too much going on. We may not be able to sit still physically. We may be jittering and fidgeting. It also can have a mental component when our minds just keep thinking again and again, this anxiety, this worry that I think is so epidemic in our culture, in the Western mind. So the physical manifestation of it, it's like our bodies constantly seem like they need to move. And there's that shifting. We can't quite get comfortable. We can't quite get settled. And sometimes it can just be unwinding from our bodies, almost a vibration, like an intensity from that. It's like this energetic buildup that happens. The mental component, you know, this is so helpful. Such a big antidote to the mental worry is grounding in the physical body or grounding in the present moment. It may be through sound. It may be through sensation. You know, a simple example that we like to use around this proliferation of thought is, and which is represented by this worry, is let's say we're taking a walk through the woods at dusk time. And at dusk, you know, lights is kind of, it's hard to see very clearly. And there's a coil of rope in the distance. But it's kind of hard to see, is that really a coil of rope or maybe it's a snake that's waiting to bite us? So if you start to go into this idea of a snake about to bite us, worry starts to build upon worry. If that snake bites me, you know, I may not be able to get treatment in time. I might even lose my leg. And then that leads me to think and worry about if I lose my leg, I won't be able to work. Maybe my partner will leave me because they won't like to see me with one leg. And then I'll be homeless. And soon this misinterpretation of experience, we've built this whole story around it. Okay, so this is it's a humorous, hopefully over-the-top example. But if you start to notice that, we do this all the time. We take one little data point and we build this whole story around it. That building of story is an expression of this restlessness and worry. And it's also a big way that we create unnecessary suffering for ourselves. Learning to recognize that we're building a story and reorient to the present moment is such a huge antidote to this process. So trying to sit with restlessness and worry. So often, you know, there's a tension, there's a movement. So the first strategy is to try to relax, to try to open, to try to broaden the perspective. Like if we're trying to hold something really narrow, try to have a sense of holding in a much broader way. One Zen teacher talked about if you had a wild horse, a wild stallion, and you try to put it in a small stall, all of a sudden it would really buck and kick and cause all kinds of damage to itself and to the stall. You take that same horse out into a wide open meadow, it's going to buck and fairly soon run around and then start to calm down and just be grazing. So restlessness and worry, trying to expand the container. So it's like you're expanding. It's like when you listen to sound, you can hear all the way around you. You can do the same thing of like a sensation arises, trying to feel that all the way around. Or restlessness arises, trying to feel it in a very big container of mind. And sometimes restlessness is just kind of rising up through our system. It's like those old lava lamps from, I think, the 60s and 70s that would kind of bubble up. It's like we're sitting quietly and restlessness starts to come up. And sometimes restlessness and worry is in relationship to something else that's arising. We're struggling. And we're fighting with this moment's experience. So starting to practice with non-resistance, with spaciousness, opening your eyes can be a beautiful way to expand your perspective. And back to our camera crew analogy, it's like the camera is shaking. You know, it's not still. I don't know if this is going to be good or not, but like if I was shaking like this, there's that shakiness that happens. And then we just can't see clearly through that. Okay, so restlessness and worry. The next one is sloth and torpor. These are the traditional words, and they're always fun to say. This is the lack of energy. This is the dullness, the sleepiness. Our attention kind of gets a little drifty. We're going in and out of daydream. We can feel it can feel quite pleasant, actually. We're just kind of, I'm a little paying attention to my breath. I'm actually thinking a little bit. You know, it's kind of this pleasant driftiness, right? This is a subtle form of sleepiness, sinking mind. Or it can be we outright fall asleep, which I'm sure many of us have experienced. You're trying to sit and you're just exhausted and you're nodding off. So how to work with sleepiness? One question to ask that sometimes is, what would I be feeling if I wasn't sleepy? Because sometimes sleepiness is a way of kind of dulling our experience. It's too much to feel right now, so I'm going to just shut my energy down. Remember in high school being a competitive swimmer and always feeling anxious about swimming meets. And I would find myself taking a nap on the way to the meet because that was much more preferable to falling asleep than trying to feel my anxiety. And so we can often kind of shut down things. So just asking that question sometimes, what would I be feeling if I wasn't sleepy? And of course, many of us don't sleep enough. We don't get enough sleep at night. We're busy with our families, with our work, or even with our minds. And of course that we're going on a deficit of sleep. And sometimes sleepiness is just arising. Again, it's very common. It's something that we often struggle with as meditators, but you don't have to struggle with it. When sleepiness arises, become curious about it. What does it actually feel like to be sleepy, to actually have that drifting mind? And there's a host of ways of bringing more energy. Opening the eyes brings more energy. Sometimes what I do is I take my fingers and I do this little interlacing loop and try not to let the fingers touching each other. And when I start to fall asleep, I feel that feedback that my fingers are touching, and it kind of wakes me up a little bit. You're welcome to stand up in the middle of a meditation. It's much harder to fall asleep if you're standing. So that's also a really helpful remedy. And with sleepiness, the camera crew, it's like the aperture is closing down. You're just not getting enough light to actually see what's present, what's here. And then the final hindrance is one of doubt. Okay, doubt is in some ways the most difficult hindrance because it can cut our energy. It can make us confused, unsure about how to practice. It starts to undercut our practice itself. So the camera crew is not sure what to look at. They're confused. Like, is the camera on? Is it off? Should I be doing this or that? And I think we all know that. Part of it's being a beginner and learning how to meditate. And part of it is you can be a very experienced meditator and just get filled with doubt. And that's why working with in a class like this and being able to ask questions and hear your fellow students share, you know, their experience, that really undercuts the doubt. And it starts to bring you more information. So doubt's one that's sometimes it's hard to figure out yourself. So it's always helpful to ask a question of a teacher if you have access to that whenever possible. So these five hindrances of craving, of aversion, of sloth and torpor, of restlessness and worry, and of doubt, these are ways our minds are conditioned and go through. And learning to meet them in a way that's not personal, to not say I'm a failure. It's like it's a weather system that's moving through our minds and bodies. Trying to reframe them as teachers. What can I learn about myself? What can I learn about my very relationship to how I live my life? Because these hindrances don't just show up in meditation. They show up all the time in our lives. So as you go through your day, start to notice when the hindrance arises. You might be irritated that the checkout line is going so slow, or someone is not staying 6 feet away, or their mask has slipped down over their nose. Notice the quality of aversion. This is the art of stepping back and noticing not only what you're irritated at, but the very quality of irritation, the very quality of wanting, their quality of restlessness. So just to close with some words by Rumi that I think it really encapsulates this attitude of turning toward the hindrances as teachers, as something that is actually to befriend the hindrances. This is called the guest house. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight, the dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.